There we are.
Welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
And I'm Judy Nathan.
And today's the Ides of December 2020.
Yeah. I can't believe, you know, I was thinking about, like, it's September seems like ages ago, but that's when Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. And that's when the whole Amy, you know, so much has happened just in 3 months, let alone
I think this year, you know, the thing is, when people talk about time scale, the time scale for the year 2020 versus every other year is just got to be different. You have to measure units of time, and it's all different.
It's like each quarter, right. Oh my, and the things that happened, and I mean,
it's just incomparable, really incomparable. And how many people, when you sort of run into a person in the street and they go, "Hi, how you doing?" How many people just say things like, "Well, you know, it's still 2020.
I could say not so great, because you can't say, "Oh, I'm fine." You can't say that anymore. I mean, maybe some people can, but I just, no.
That's true. But there are some kind of interesting and arguably spectacular days. So earlier this week, I believe yesterday, if I'm not mistaken.
You mean Sunday when it was 60 degrees?
Well, that was cool. That was warm. That was great.
Yeah.
But the thing is that we actually got to have the Electoral College cast their votes.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And make more or less official the legal presidential election results. And simultaneously, the very same day,
see
the very first American vaccinations.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm just too depressed. The vaccine thing, I mean, people treating it like it was the end of a war. I mean, I guess it is, but
it's really more like I would liken it more to the invasion at Normandy.
In other words,
the turning of the tide.
I'm not feeling that. I don't know why.
There's a long war to go. Why I would make the analogy.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I mean, to me, even having it available in the late spring sounds pretty soon to me, considering it was just a year ago, late spring, that we even were aware of it, even though it had been around for several months before that. So
right, and that back then, when they say, "Oh, we won't have a vaccine for another year," it seemed like it was forever.
Yeah.
And now it actually seems like it's in the near horizon. You know.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, on the horizon in the western sky, in around the 21st, the near touching of Jupiter and Saturn in the western sky. Hopefully we'll have a nice clear night. You know, they'll be so very close together.
When was that? Yeah,
right. Now, it's coming up in about 6 days. You know, I haven't looked in the western sky, but I'm sure that they're getting pretty close. But they're going to get like so close that they'll be almost not coincident, but close, really close.
Saturn has rings. Does Jupiter have rings?
Does it have
several moons around it? I forget.
Jupiter has so many moons, more moons than you know, Red Sox fans. You know, some are well-behaved moons like Red Sox fans, and some are not, right? Yeah, some planets have shepherd moons. Planetary science is very interesting.
The harvest moon,
blue moon, you know.
That's my screen name, you know, for a lot of things is Junimoon.
I know. I've seen it many times over.
I'm a moon. Well, I don't know why I'm moon. Maybe it's in Saturn is one of my signs. I know that.
Yeah. Now, one thing I think is probably worth noting. I don't know if I have the link to it, unfortunately, because I was having some sort of issues.
That's right. Here. You're having issues. We don't want to get.
Sometimes computers refuse to allow certain web pages to open.
They just don't like you.
That's what it is. It's a conspiracy. I'm telling you.
Okay.
You know, what I was going to say was that we talked, I think, 2 weeks ago about there was this sort of kerfuffle about neighborhood groups and, you know, they're the most wonderful thing on earth. They're the most evil thing on earth.
Right.
Of course, the truth is always somewhere in between.
Right.
And, but actually what happened apparently over this past weekend, I think it was, there was actually some Zoom meeting. I wasn't part of it, by the way. I'm getting the second hand of various people from all these various neighborhood groups around the city. And they actually kind of came together, put together a website, you know, called Neighborhood Groups of Cambridge.
I didn't go to that link on your page, but I saw that you made it.
Yeah, and with an invitation where, you know, you find out how you can be a part of it. So they're basically doing broad scale outreach. Anybody in any neighborhood wants to find out who these neighborhood groups are.
Is it going to be another listserv or what?
I don't know. I have no idea what it'll evolve into. I think they're really trying to have a site where there'll be, you know, people can actually find out about what's going on here and even across neighborhoods. I think it's a pretty good initiative. You know, sometimes the biggest problem I have with neighborhood groups is not the stuff the nonsense that was being spoken of that the city council is about, you know, and all that controversy. Yeah. That's all nonsense. The big problem I have is that there are too few people sometimes who take too much ownership, you know, and they probably could use some help and a little broadening of their horizons and whatever. And to me, anything that kind of moves us in that direction is a good thing. Yeah. So I wish them all well, and I hope that moves into a good place, you know, and we'll all be happy. So anyway. So what else happening around town? You know,
there were some meetings last week, I think, but I can't remember now. I know I attended something. I don't know what.
Yeah, you know. Certainly we had a city council meeting last night.
Well, last night, right? But there were some. Yeah. Meetings, I thought last week, but I.
No, actually, some of the topics of this week were just carryovers from the previous week. You know, the courtesy of the charter, right? There are certain themes that are kind of running through, and actually, I'll mention a few of them here. Okay. Again, it's just kind of marginally disorganized, but just to mention a few of them.
Yeah.
Certainly the overriding topic of the whole year is still COVID-19, right? And
exactly, the COVID report. Yeah.
Yeah, and it, you know, I think the council made the right decision in asking the manager to come back and make sure that their updates were every week.
Oh, from the advisory board. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I continue to be impressed with Cambridge's public health people and the people from the Cambridge Health Alliance.
Oh, the way they do their testing. I just actually had another test. And I didn't have an appointment, but you really can do walk-ins, and maybe they should advertise that more, but
they're much more freely letting that be known now.
Well, the appointments are every 5 minutes, and some people make an appointment and show up, but it goes pretty quickly. They have like at least three stations. I've been to Cambridge Side Gallery, and I went to 50 Church Street yesterday. So, total maybe 10, 15 minutes at that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still a little perplexed sometimes at the kinds of questions some city councilors ask about. Yeah. Some of what they're asking out is exactly spot on.
Yeah.
Other times, you know, it's almost like they're kind of competing for pseudo expertise.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, rather than just sort of asking the experts and accepting what they have to say, you know, so it's a little off-putting sometimes. One of the interesting data points, at least one counselor kept, you know, harping on, was this idea about the wastewater testing.
Oh, right,
so they basically have four sites, sewage.
Right.
And, to sort of do some sort of testing. But, you know, it's just fundamentally difficult to, I mean, I don't know what people are expecting to get from that data other than the.
It's a precursor to what could happen.
Right. I think what you're doing is you're just getting a measure of what we sort of know anyway, just from the fact that the infection rates are up.
I don't know. I did attend, actually, it wasn't city council, the metropolitan area, but they had a thing on wastewater treatment. And Sam Lipson actually was one of the panelists. So I did watch that, and most of it went over my head. But what I did out of it was that you'll see a spike, but it's usually a week or two later that you'll see it actually validated. So, and then there was a south and a north. So I guess we're fit into the north. I don't know, but.
I haven't seen a whole lot that, you know, that enables you to actually, other than validation, I haven't yet been able to kind of figure out.
Go from there.
What actionable things are they that you can do other than go, oh yeah, Houston, we've got a problem.
Well, you know, if it's coming from four different areas, then you know there may be a higher incidence of an undetected or transmission that people aren't aware of.
Right, but so unless you're actually right, but unless you're actually getting data that says, well, it's coming from this Watermark building, or it's coming from Harvard University,
I didn't even know. I didn't pay attention that much last night. But they actually have four spots that they're drawing from? That at least is something. It's quadrants, right?
Right. Yeah. So I think it's one down Waverly in Cambridgeport. I think I saw the locations, but I can't recall where they were.
Did Tim Toomey bring up that based on that he thought East Cambridge was in trouble, or I don't know?
He did see that the numbers actually coming from East Cambridge seemed to be higher, right? But the thing is, that hasn't changed. That's been in terms of the number of infections per 1,000 in each of the parts of the city, East Cambridge has been at the top of the list.
Does that
include
some of those tall built, a lot of those apartment complexes and North Point and all, is that all considered East Cambridge?
That would have to be, yeah.
That's a lot of people. I mean, there's a lot of high rises down there.
Yeah, but
I think Alewife would be.
But it's infections per 1,000 or per 10,000. Right. You know? So the thing is just the density of cases in the port.
Exactly.
And right. I mean, the three prime spots have been East Cambridge, the port, and North Cambridge. And North Cambridge specifically, North Cambridge is maybe too broad a term for a bigger area.
Well, you're not going to get it in West Cambridge because you have single family or, condos.
Well, but you also have fewer people. I mean,
density. It's all about density.
Right, but if you had fewer people and you had 10 cases in the whole place, you might still have a high number because it's 10 per much smaller denominator.
I've seen a lot of new
information other than the fact that the numbers are generally higher. One of the things that I'm it's funny, maybe it's just sort of nonsense optimism. I actually keep looking at the graphs, and I still dutifully produce them every week. Actually, I'm going to just pop over here.
Yeah,
hopefully, I can.
Yeah,
you can do that. I can at least get one page here to work.
Yeah, maybe
sort of on my main page.
Oh, there it
is. Okay, so you can see that the numbers are continuing to rise in a pretty steady way.
Yes.
Now I have to say they were rising at a steady rate throughout the summer, the cumulative totals, but a very slow, steady rate. And it's just been picked up. It's really like 20 plus per day new infections as opposed to 4 or 5. That's really significant. But I think maybe other one, I don't know why my other picture isn't loading. I hope I didn't, I failed to,
what
you know, I think everything is just failing to load on the page here. So.
Oh, you had another picture of what?
Yeah, it's the one that actually shows the spikes, the sort of moving 7-day average.
Yeah.
Problem is the internet is not my friend here tonight, So.
I did see a stat though. It said that we had less infections or positive than yesterday or something.
Yeah, but the thing is it, you're going from day to day, it's really a matter of when the reporting happens.
You have to look at the week average. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, no, we actually got another 42 add on cumulative, to the total, but some of that is backfilled data from previous dates.
Can I ask, I've asked this before and my brain doesn't remember, does that include the schools? I mean, the universities or not?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, basically,
so
if it's a Cambridge
university
resident.
So it's like 15 and 20.
The numbers are pretty much saying the chief culprits, if I may use that word, are the people in the 20 to 29 range.
But they're being tested like twice a week. So
I'm not talking just students here. I'm just saying younger people. I mean, they may be out of school and working jobs, enjoying their high tech salaries and partying down.
You're missing my point. The numbers reported for Harvard and MIT, would that be half of those?
I haven't looked at the Harvard MIT numbers, even though I have a link to it there on the site. Right. But the thing is, that was a significant component. I don't really know how that has been trending up or down or whatever just in the last couple of weeks. I just haven't been bothering to look.
But I mean, if it is them, then they have all these protocols. They have to quarantine. They have that because they're testing twice a week. So,
I think it's the universities themselves aren't the problem. I think the problem is you can have people of that age group who may be university students who, on their own, in their own housing situations,
but they are then probably
infecting others
more than the average person, though.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the only valid argument that some people have about closing down kind of general facilities, be they restaurants or whatever, is that you don't know who's coming in. And if somebody who's sort of a bad actor, who's basically been partying down with their buddies and pals, and
But you know what?
a super spreader event, and then they show up at the restaurant.
Yeah,
you know,
but you don't have to be a bad actor. You could have had one unfortunate meeting with somebody that maybe they were, and you know, it's transmitted so easily. With, you know, 80% of people, I just had to remind myself of that. 80% of people will either have no symptoms. They could have COVID, but either have no symptoms or have mild symptoms. That's a pretty high percentage.
That is.
That means a lot of people have had it and don't know it. So that's what's so hard about this, is that if you don't have symptoms, that doesn't mean you can't transmit it.
That's true. You know, but the thing is also in terms of places of business where everybody talks about nail salons. I don't know how nail salons sort of become such a high incident thing here, but
well, you're very close contact.
Maybe so. You know, but you know, but gyms and then restaurants and whatever. And I'm still of the opinion that you have to prove to me a little bit about where's that vector, you know, where's the, show me the connections, you know.
Well, also, because Okay.
There's some establishments are doing a really great job at minimizing risk.
I will tout HealthWorks, which I mentioned to you, which owns, there's a gym in Cambridge, and Mark Harrington Jr., who's now the owner from his dad. Anyway, he was in public comment. He sent a letter. And I know for a fact, now I have not gone into the gym. I am a member. I do virtual, but I am joining again as of January. And I know what they've done. I follow it all the time. They've done air circulation. They've done everything. And people are so respectful. There's like four in a class. They have not had any outbreaks as far as I know. And they know everyone that's been in their building all the time because it's a check-in thing.
So yeah, that to me, the real injustice
is those people, you know.
Yeah, that's the injustice, is that if you're doing everything right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you do everything right, you know, so that your place might even be safer than,
it's cleaner than most people's homes.
Exactly. And then you're going to get penalized because of some broad brush. That's kind of unfair.
And
I'm not suggesting it's easy to come up with sort of the right way of making decisions about should be able to operate freely and who should not. But, you know, I'm not trying to belittle the
why can't we do inspections? We're so big on, we want to do Airbnb and all the time that took. We could do an inspection of a place that's applying to be open.
I mean, why isn't the license commission paying twice what weekly visits to pretty much every place in town? I don't know how much they're
or
staffing.
Or to the places that are active. You're right. I mean, there's not that many gyms in Cambridge. There aren't.
Right. Yeah. You know, and I'm more for a kind of a more targeted way of sort of addressing these kinds of problems rather than the broad brush.
Right.
You know, but there are some pretty loud players, especially among the political players, who are all about the broad brush. You know, and if you don't shut everything down, then you're an evil person. And I just think it's a little
I mean, I guess, you know, Germany, that's what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, things can sometimes get to that point, but I don't know. I don't know that we're really exactly at that point. So.
Well, we'll see. I think any minute we could get an announcement because, you know.
No, I think we may have to go through.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is that it's one thing is if we say, okay, we're going to curtail activities for a week or two.
But it is Christmas time. So that's actually a good time. A lot of places also shut down.
You know, with an understanding that this isn't until spring, I think people need a little reassurance about that.
Yeah, it would probably be some.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's a big piece of what city council talks about. And rightfully so. It's the biggest news of the year, you know, and that's completely appropriate. Yeah. There are some other things actually that were on the agenda that I don't think anybody talked about, but there are things that I find interesting and noteworthy. And one of the things I'm going to mention especially because I know you served on a women's commission once upon a time.
Eons ago,
right? Mm-hmm. But the thing is, there was a budget item, you know, just for funding.
Yeah, I saw that. What was the funding?
It's basically, it's mapping feminist Cambridge.
Oh, right. Which they already have, isn't there already a map?
Yeah, they're actually, and I actually put a few links on the website to some of these ones. So you can do your walking tours on your own.
Right.
I've been on some of these tours and they're great. You know, I mean, I just look forward to the day we can actually do this in person again. Cambridge is such a really great place for anyone who has an even mild interest in history. You know, whether we're talking about
this walk, you can do on your own too.
You can do it on your own too, as well. You know, a lot of historical markers, they kind of help you along. They're markers in front of houses, they're markers on the streets. And if you go around with a little guide, you know, it's really kind of a great way to go for a walk, quite honestly.
On your phone. because I think it's on the phone.
You can do it on the phone as well. That's right. You know, I did some walks, historical walks, just like 20th century stuff. Yeah. Fellow, he's actually works at the Somerville Library, actually doing ones around Inman Square and Mid Cambridge, where I am, on mapping utopia. You know, there were these sort of these, you know, the kind of the 60s utopian oriented people, and some of the sites and locations and stories. You know, like the trout fishing in America, a place that used to be on Prospect Street, you know, we're surrounded by it, and it's really great. And so whenever I see a budget item saying, you know, can we support another history oriented project, whether it's within the Historical Commission or within the Women's Commission or whatever, I'm always happy to see it. You know, because
how much money? It wasn't a lot of money, was it?
Oh, it's not a lot of money. It's just that the thing is, it formally has to be budgeted, and
No, I understand.
Following city council agenda is kind of a way of kind of getting a little tip off about some of these things. You know, so I thought that was a pretty great thing to do. By the way, there's another thing, which is, you know, the sort of a linger. I don't know really how it's going to end up. They did an appointment of a task force or committee. I think it was a Denise Simmons order to looking into some of the history, you know, shady history and otherwise, of, you know, some of the public buildings, monuments, markers, street names, people who might have been involved in, let's say, the slave trade or some other slavery activity.
Where do you go with all that? I mean,
I don't know really where you go with that. You know, I mean, you know, my personal opinion about this, and I don't think I'm going to say anything controversial here, is that if there was a monument in the South put up by the Ku Klux Klan in favor of some sorry ass general from the Confederacy who nobody cared about anyway, and you want to pull down that statue, be my guest, you know? But the thing is there, you know, we have a long history, and, you know, and there are certain things that, you know, people might have been engaged in various times throughout history, which were not considered heinous at the time, though maybe they should have been. And I like to learn from history, and I hope everybody learns from history, and maybe some things need to change, but I also like to preserve some of the history, even the muddy parts of history too. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's a lot to be learned from, and you know, so if you find out that that the name of your street comes from a person who, you know, was a sort of a bad actor in one way, even if that person was a great person in 59 other ways, I don't want to see them start just changing all the street names.
No, they should just have a plaque or some kind of thing that you put the history of this.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Because most people aren't going to associate that name. I mean, it's become something else now. And I just feel like, yes, make it known, but don't destroy it. I mean,
there is a certain mindset that says that you must eradicate any history you're not happy about.
Cancel culture.
It's similar to cancel culture. Cancel culture is usually targeted toward individuals. You know, you did something bad, so we're going to ruin you now.
Yeah, but it could be about, all right.
Yeah, and oftentimes people get it wrong anyway. I remember when they were pulling down statues of Ulysses S. Grant.
Yeah.
And it turned out because he owned a slave. Well, what they'd failed to find, they found out afterwards that, well, that's because it was somebody he worked alongside of. The person was Grant, to him, who he then promptly freed. So, you know, it's he owned a slave for the purposes of freeing them. Oh, but he owned a slave, therefore tear down his monument.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like lumping one thing, like generalizing about everything and not knowing.
Yeah. So I mean, if they want to identify some bad, real bad actors, fine, you know, blow them out of the water, you know, but let's be a little more thoughtful about this too. So, but anything, you know, I'm just a student of history, and I love hearing about local history and you know, so these are the types of things that kind of like, you know, get my attention pretty easily, quite honestly.
Good.
You know, there are amongst many other things. There was one other item that was, and I'm just going to make a point about this, is that there are two items that are sort of in the Port neighborhood. One is this building 105 Windsor, which is just sort of.
I know. I went by there on a walk. It's just a lot right now. It's not a building.
Right? Well, there's the Cherry Street lot. And then there's the building in Windsor, which is just a city-owned building. It's just been sitting there derelict for years. I don't even remember what it used to be used for.
Like why? Why can't we do things for stuff that we own?
This is a great unanswered question. What is it about this city, which is, you know, the so-called embarrassment of riches?
Affordable housing, this, we got to do that. Here we have a building.
Well, you know, the big problem, and I think this is really was the point I was going to make about it, is that we are very confused about what the community wants in this town. I don't think we have a very good way of ascertaining what the community wants.
Oh, come on. In that neighborhood, they want housing.
Well, not necessarily. There's a bunch of people who want to have something like a place for young entrepreneurs, you know, job creation for local kids. I think that's pretty good.
Oh, I thought there was something.
You know, the default is always is, oh, we got to put on affordable housing, you know. Okay, well, that's the default position. But there actually are some other people in the Port neighborhood who have other ideas as well. You know, it's not monolithic, people's perspective about what they might want there. But the point I was only going to make was that, you know, just listening to this city councilor versus that city councilor saying, no, I know what's best for the community. No, I spoke to my friends who live over here and they say this, therefore that's...
Was it discussed a lot? I guess I wasn't paying attention.
You know, I think it was Zondervan and Simmons kind of came up with some sort of understanding, you know, for a process. For people,
so was it going to a committee meeting to discuss?
I don't know if it'll be a committee meeting because honestly, it might be beyond that. But, you know, just to sort of come up with what's the best use of these properties. You know, the city has assets. We don't just sit on them while people are debating it for 20 years, you know?
Right. Speaking of which, something out. Also, what's this property that MIT gave the city that's on Mass Ave? I think I've seen it. It looks like an old fraternity building or something.
There's a building that's right across from where Toscanini's was. Right. That was so a three-decker.
How long have they had that they're not
doing? Well, they basically passed it along to the city probably 2 or 3 years ago, and it's just sort of, you know, waiting.
Oh, it's across from Toscanini's. It's not on
it's the one that used to be directly behind the gas station that used to be there at where Sydney Street now cuts through.
Okay, we have about 30 seconds left till we take a break.
Yeah. Anyway, the last point I was going to make was just that that I think we need to do a better job of figuring out what who speaks for the community, because it isn't just city councilors.
I know. You know. Well, but they're going to say they get emails and this and that, which is, you know, you got to pay attention.
True. So that's one voice that we can definitely hear them out, but I think we can need to do better, and the city departments need to do better, to be sure.
All right. So we will come back in few minutes and we're going to talk about other things.
That's right, including emerging candidates.
See you then. Right.